To the Transportation Finance and Policy Division for this February 7th. I'm Frank Hornstein, the chair, and as we wait for more members to gather, I wanted to let folks know we have a very slight change to the agenda. We're going to have Representative Tanner last. He is, I believe, just arriving at the airport. His flight from Atlanta was delayed by a couple of hours, but he's here. Wow. And so our guests from the South will have some bold North stories to tell their friends about the snowstorm. So I am very, very pleased that on our agenda today we have several guests that I met, as well as Representative West and Representative Petersburg. We recently attended a conference in Atlanta at the end of the year last year in December, and I was impressed with these folks because of what they were able to accomplish in Georgia on a bipartisan basis, a comprehensive transportation package. And of course, there are many differences between our states, but there's also a lot of similarities. And I think that it's always exciting and interesting to learn from folks in other parts of the country. The issues that they're grappling with in many ways are similar to those that we are. So we're just dedicating our entire hearing today to those folks and their observations in terms of their experiences and what we may be able to take from those as we move forward in crafting our transportation bill this year. So the format is that we'll have several presentations. Members can feel free, as we traditionally do in this committee, just raise your hand. I'll call on you, and you can ask our guest questions at any time. So I'm going to start with Mr. John Weinhagen from the Minneapolis Chamber, and he will introduce our guests from Georgia. And thank you very much for your involvement in helping to bring these esteemed gentlemen here, and we look forward to their testimony. And please state your name for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Weinhagen. I am president and CEO of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Our organization is one of the founding partners of Keep Minnesota Moving, along with the St. Paul Area Chamber. I am joined by my colleague, B. Kyle, here today, as well as East Metro Strong. Keep Minnesota Moving was formed to advocate for a stronger and more comprehensive transportation system, including more, better, and faster transit in the Twin Cities and across our state. Keep Minnesota Moving's focus for the 2019 legislative session is around advancing our modern arterial bus rapid transit system. The A-Line that's been online for about 2 years now has increased ridership by 35%. People love the incredible service and amenities that it provides. To improve our regular route bus system by investing in some of the top projects proposed by Metro Transit, recognizing that the bus system is the backbone of our transit system, and we should be making investments in increasing capacity. Fully funding Greater Minnesota transit needs. Greater Minnesota employers are telling us that they increasingly need to move people around their systems. It may look a little bit different than it does in Minneapolis and the metro area, but we certainly need to recognize that there are needs all across this state with regards to moving people to jobs. And then fully funding the core operations of Metro Transit. 80% of people who choose transit in our metro area are going to school or work. 95 million people choose to leverage the transit system in the metropolitan area each year, and it's an important part of our economic competitiveness and our regional economy, and we believe that it warrants the necessary investments to keep its base operations moving. So we are honored today to be joined by some esteemed guests. We earlier gave them the Bold North Champions Award for making it in and braving Minnesota in February. They have extensive experience in making progress on transit transportation issues. Representative Kevin Tanner, who will be joining us, is a Republican from Dawsonville, Georgia, serves as the chairman of the Transportation Committee in the Georgia House of Representatives. In addition to that, he is a small business owner and was named the 2018 Legislator of the Year by the Georgia Chamber of Commerce, in large part due to his work in establishing bipartisan legislation in House Bill 930 that created a structure to increase transit funding across Metro Atlanta. Dave Williams joins us and is Vice President of the Atlanta Metro Chamber for Infrastructure and Government Affairs. In that role, he worked closely with business leaders to promote policies to improve Atlanta's quality of life and infrastructure, and he'll certainly share with us his role in advancing their legislation. They were both talking about how they moved legislation that addressed the needs for the whole state. The Georgia story is an incredible example of how people from all across the state, from all parties, can come together from a big metro area to small rural towns to move a state forward. Georgia is one of many states that has addressed statewide transportation needs, and John Robert Smith, who is chairman of Transportation for America and a former mayor of Meridian, Mississippi, will provide a little bit of a broader view on the issue. With that, I would like to welcome up Dave Williams to provide a background, and then we'll go from there. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Mr. Weinhagen. Welcome, Mr. Williams, and please state your name for the record. And we, again, appreciate so much your making the trip from Atlanta to Minnesota in February.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And especially after surviving the Super Bowl. So we doubly appreciate that. So.
Well, we learned an awful lot from Minnesota about hosting Super Bowls. So. But thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Dave Williams. I work for the Metro Atlanta Chamber, where I serve as the Vice President for Infrastructure and Public Policy. I work in our public policy shop. So, Mr. Chairman, tell me how long you'd like to talk, me to give an overview, or?
I think, perhaps till about 1:10, and we'll have questions, maybe 1:15, and then we'll have Mr. Smith and then Mr. Tanner when he gets here.
Okay, so about 15 minutes will be fine. Okay.
Be great.
Well, good. I'll try to cover a lot of ground as quickly as I can and make sure we leave some time for questions, but you mentioned the Super Bowl. You probably remember that in 1996. Atlanta was fortunate to win and host the Olympic Games. And in preparation for that, we made a tremendous amount of investment and put a lot of infrastructure in place to be able to host that, and it was very successful. But then upon the conclusion of that, we really didn't do much. We spent for the next 5 or 10 years, we did not do rail expansions. We didn't put down new roadway capacity and those sorts of things. And our chamber and a number of our leaders in our chamber perceived that pretty quickly, and it took us a while to really find our voice and convince a number of partners that we needed to be at the legislature to make the case that we needed to increase our investment in transportation infrastructure. We were the third fastest growing region in the country, yet Georgia was 49th. In per capita spending on transportation. And so really starting in 2007, we really began in earnest a lobbying effort with a number of partners. And for 3 years, we were unsuccessful. And then in the fourth year, rather than increasing investment, the legislature said, here's what we'll do. We'll let you ask your residents if they'd like to increase their spending. And so the state was divided into 12 regions. Each region had a referendum in 2012, and each region was able to decide what their mix of projects would be for a one-penny sales tax that would last 10 years. It would be renewable. In Metro Atlanta, that would have generated about $8 billion in that 10-year period. We produced a project list. It was 52% transit, 48% roads. But we were not a referendum state. We were also in the largest recession that any of us had really ever lived through, so the economic outlooks were very poor. As I like to say, the outcome in that election, the proponents of the tax, we came in second place. We won the silver medal. It was almost 2-1. It was we got 37% of the vote to support that, 63 opposed. So that was people look back at the time and considered it a gigantic failure. Notably, throughout the state of Georgia, there were three regions that did pass, and they have not looked back. They have been very, very encouraged, very satisfied, and thrilled. And we've had an additional region that has come back and said, even though we did pass it the first time, we want to pass it this time. But what's happened is we use that spring as a springboard. So we kind of hit a dead end, but we use it as a springboard. And we've approached it differently. It really demonstrated to our legislators that this wasn't going to work. We lost 2-1. There was no amount of doing it a little bit harder next time, or doing it a little smarter, or raising a little more money that we're going to convince people to make that. So it would require bold action on behalf of the legislature. The great news is, in Georgia, at the time and still today, we had a tremendous unity that we had to address this issue from all of our statewide officials at the time and still today are elected as Republicans. The governor and the lieutenant governor, the speaker, both chairs of the transportation committees in our two houses, the business community, labor, environmental groups, equity groups, it was, we had a tremendous coalition that we had built through that 2012 attempt. And in 2015, we passed a landmark piece of legislation called the Transportation Funding Act of 2015. It had a number of components. The most significant was a reform and an increase of our motor fuel tax. We moved from a combined sales and excise tax to an excise tax. We had other fees in there. We had truck fees. We had electric vehicle fees. We had a hotel motel nightly fee. And what that had the effect of doing is it took us, we were generating about just shy of $1 billion per year in state funds. So we went from $1 billion to $2 billion when the governor signed that bill. It's also indexed. The reason we found ourselves in the problem that we were in was because we last had raised our motor fuel tax in 1971 and it had never been indexed. So that's really why we were falling behind. But that was multimodal. The great thing about it is, even though we had Republican leadership, it was very bipartisan. We also had a tremendous amount of unity from rural parts of the state to the more urban metropolitan parts of the state, big business, small business, civic interests, and so there was a tremendous amount of unity. So that may not be transferable to a lot of other places that look to see what we're doing. But that was substantial. Since then, we haven't stopped, and this is an important lesson I think that we always like to share. We have, every year since then, we've passed other measures to help with transit, to help with freight mobility, giving, in a lot of cases, giving local communities the ability to ask their citizens if they'd like to have additional investment. And when Chairman Tanner's here, he's been an extraordinary leader. By the way, you mentioned from Dawsonville, one of the most rural parts of our state. And so he was a champion for House Bill 930, which was really a bill that created a governance and funding capacity for Metro Atlanta. This year we'll be working on legislation for the rest of the state of Georgia and how that can work. There are 128 transit systems throughout Georgia, and they're all very important, and we need to make sure they're governed and managed and funded appropriately. So I guess those are some of the lessons that we would offer as a takeaway, that it's a constant drumbeat of progress, incremental progress, being bold and having the ability to just stick with it despite setbacks. And I think that Mayor Smith can talk a lot about it with Transportation for America. They were an incredible resource for us as well, to be able to bring us learning from other states, and that was very useful to us. I'll mention this one last thing. I meant to mention this earlier, and I forgot. At the time when we passed this bill in 2015, we were about 56% dependent on federal dollars for our transportation spending statewide. Yesterday, our transportation commissioner presented to our joint committee of our House and Senate committees, and we're at less than 38% now. So what we've done is we've decreased our dependence on federal aid, which is very important, because not only do we not have to worry about things like shutdowns and delays, but the dollars that we generate at the state level don't come with the encumbrances in the regulatory NEPA requirements, those other sorts of things. So we can deploy those, we can get those projects delivered a lot faster than we would if they were federal projects.
Thank you so much. We already have a question. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Williams, for coming up here. I have to admit, the weather that you invited us down to Atlanta was much better than what we're offering here. Mm-hmm. But could you review it for us again, the funding sources for this additional infrastructure investment that you had?
I'll talk first about the Transportation Funding Act, which is called House Bill 170. And I saw these slides. Are these slides going to be distributed or from?
We have them.
Okay. So some of this information is contained in these slides, but these are not mine. This is actually my sister, my cousin organization, the Georgia Transportation Alliance, and we were very in lockstep on this legislation. But in the Transportation Funding Act, a major portion of it, they're actually, in fact, I will, if everybody has these, I'll point out what slide we're on here. This is on slide, well, it doesn't say, it says HB 170 overview. But what we did is we took a combination of a motor fuel excise tax and a sales tax on motor fuel, and we converted it into a excise tax only on fuel and diesel. And then we had an alternative fuel vehicle, an alternative, like an electric vehicle fee that we had. Prior to that, there wasn't any. And in fact, there was a $5,000 tax credit. And so we, with an increasing share of electric vehicles and AFVs and ZEVs, it was important for us to do that. A truck fee, and then the $5 hotel motel tax fee. It had a net effect of adding about, at the time it was a little short of $1 billion. Since then, it's been an increment of over $1 billion annually to our state program.
So if I could follow up, Mr. Chair. So it looks like you had a sales tax that you converted into an excise tax, plus an increase in that tax. But what you said something about a motel hotel fee.
There's a $5 per night hotel motel fee. This came at a conference. This wasn't in the original bill. When the House passed the bill originally, it was just a straight excise tax. It went to the Senate, and it got changed. They would say improved. But it went to conference, and when it came out of conference, this was what the fan funding formula was, and it was overwhelmingly passed. It was bipartisan. I'll also just mention that this is just House Bill 170. We've had Senate Bill 369. We've had earlier this year House Bill 930, which were transit measures, and they allowed us to have local referendum. They created funding opportunities at the county and city level throughout Georgia. There also have been numerous bond appropriations for roads and bridges in the state bond package. I think we've done $100 million a year for each of the last 4 years. And then we've had inclusion of $100 million and then $75 million, and then last year, in the current fiscal year, $100 million in the state bond package for transit. So there have been some direct appropriations, local funding opportunities, and then this is the House Bill 170 mix of new funds.
If I could ask one final question.
Yes, please, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the $5 tax on hotels, do you know how much that raised?
And I don't know. I don't know. I shouldn't guess, but I will. I want to say it's in the neighborhood of $120 to $150 million a year. So it's about two-thirds of the total revenue package is the excise tax, so that's about $600 to $650 million. The other $200 to $300 million is these other fees.
Yes, was it? Okay, let's do Representative Wolgamont and then Representative Elkins.
Mr. Williams, again, thank you very much for coming all the way up to Minnesota to give us your insights and your perspectives on what's worked in your state. I wanted to ask some more input from you on what the business community thought of these measures, and you know what their perspective was on the increase in taxes, you know what effect that had on the business climate, on the tax climate, and if there were any states who, because of this, were there states that left because it hurt the tax climate, or was it actually good for businesses because there was much needed funding for the roads, bridges, and infrastructure? Or is it mixed? More insight on that would be appreciated.
Mr. Williams.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Thank you, for the question. The business community was solidly behind this. It was clear to us that we were underinvesting in our infrastructure. We actually, there was an independent report, and again, these slides are very handy. I wish I could claim them as my own. But on the prior page, you'll see there's a slide that's called HNTBEY Report. HNTB, which is the Global Infrastructure and Engineering Consultant Firm, worked with EY, Ernst & Young, to go through and establish, we all knew that we were underinvesting. The question is how much, what should we do about it? And they were very thoughtful, did a lot of research, worked together looking at a number of regions globally, and established that, what would the ROI be on the investment. So there were two main findings out of that. First was that the ROI for every dollar invested was about $4.70. So it was an ROI of almost 5 to 1 in terms of increased economic activity and growth. So that was very important. And then the second thing that they really helped us with is to really put a handle on how much new funding was needed. And that's where just for system preservation alone, $1 billion, really it was 1 to 1.5, but $1 billion of new annual funding was needed just for us to maintain the system that we had. Our governor, Governor Deal, in his 2015 State of the State speech, shared that we were repaving 2% of the state's road system, road network at the time, which translated into a given road being repaved, but once every 50 years. And so he told the story in his State of the State speech that if a youngster was fortunate to gain their first driver's license at the age of 16 that year, that they would be on Social Security. If the state had repaved their road, that they would be on Social Security before it would be repaved again. And so, and what he didn't say was that it had been forecast for the following year that we were going to go to a 1% of road repaving schedule. So luckily we were able to avoid that, advance a lot of projects, and especially our roads and bridges. We had an awful lot of roads and bridges that we were able to deal with. They weren't unsafe. I know you guys had a tragic accident or a failure of a 35-year, several years prior to that. We had not had that, not a catastrophic incident, but we had a number of bridges that were either functionally obsolete or structurally deficient, and we've been able to address those. And anyway, I can get you more data on that if you'd like. So
I just want to pause here and welcome Chair Tanner, and we may revert back to our original agenda where we had him going after you and then Mr. Smith at the end. Representative Elkins, Representative Bernardi, do you want to ask Mr. Williams a question, or would you prefer to ask the chairman?
Because it's to this slide. Yeah,
we'll have the two questions for you, and then we'll bring up Chair Tanner.
I'm happy to defer to the chair.
So on the HB 170 overview, I'm seeing an alternative fuel vehicle fee of $200 to $300. Is that one time or per year?
That's an annual registration fee.
So I just did a quick calculation, Mr. Chair, and if you owned a car, drove it 10,000 miles a year and paid 26 cents a gallon for your fuel, that's about $100 per year. So you're charging electric vehicles two to three times what a gas-powered vehicle would pay?
Well, that would be the state collection. There would also be, the federal motor fuel tax wouldn't be charged on, that user of that vehicle wouldn't be paying the federal motor fuel tax either. The calculus was done in such a way that it, and again, Chair Tanner can, mm-hmm. You can reply to this or correct me, but we believe that was what we believed the, what a rough estimate would be of the average, what an average operator of a vehicle in Georgia would pay if given a certain mileage and a certain MPG.
So, and just a comment welcome. That, Mr. Chair, that my daughter Danielle says hi.
Okay.
Danielle Elkins.
Oh, I apologize. She sent me a text yesterday, and which I'm delinquent in responding to that. But so that's, I mean, now thank you for making that connection. So she wished me well and told me to pack my mittens.
Representative Bernardi, just hold for 1 second. Representative Torkelson has a question to this point, and then we'll get to you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question as a reminder that we did impose a fee on all electric vehicles mm-hmm. in the state of Minnesota at $75 annually, and we estimated that to be about half of what the kind of average vehicle would pay in gas tax in a given year.
I'd like to see the math on that. But.
Okay. Well, to
I don't
continue.
Have the math on that, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, maybe if people are very interested, I'm sure Mr. Lee can crunch some numbers for us. We're going to hear from Representative Bernardi, and then we'll bring up Chair Tanner.
Right, because my question could go to Chair Tanner as well. I was wondering on the first page, it highlights that there was a 25% local return. Did that make it in the final package?
Say the 25% local return, that was in the referendum. That was included in the referendum in 2012. So that was part of the what we call the Transportation Investment Act referendum. So those three regions in Georgia that passed the referendum, and I don't know if there's a map. There is a map. So I believe it was regions 8, 9, and 7. Based on that map, they did pass, and the answer is yes. So whatever the collections were from that county, then there was 25% of those were returned to the county for local projects. Okay. And the rest of the funds were used for the approved project list that had been assembled by the roundtables in those districts.
Representative Chair Hornstein, I just brought that up because I heard Los Angeles had that as part of their package too, and it gained a lot of support across the state because of that. So I just wanted to point that out.
Good point. So, well, thank you, and if there's additional questions, Mr. Williams will stick around, and we really appreciate that overview. I think you set the table nicely for our featured speaker.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, members, let's do this. We do now have a quorum, so we want to conduct some business so you can see how we conduct business here in Minnesota. We do have a quorum, members, and Representative Petersburg, would you move the minutes for our last meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the minutes of the February 5th meeting.
Moves the February 5th minutes discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, it is my special privilege and honor to introduce to you Chair Kevin Tanner, who chairs the equivalent committee to ours in the Georgia House of Representatives. And I first met Chair Tanner, as we mentioned earlier, in December at the Transportation for America Conference in Atlanta. And I was so impressed with not only what he was able to accomplish, but the way he accomplished it. He talked to so many individuals and organizations all over the state of Georgia. Incredible effort, you know, at building relationships. And I think that's, you know, that kind of collaboration and that kind of relationship building, I think, is key to moving a bill this big and moving a bill this controversial. And so I think that he has a lot to offer, and I just turn the microphone over to you, and welcome to Minnesota, and sorry for our weather and the delays you had to incur getting here, but we're glad you're here and appreciate your time and effort coming here. And please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name's Kevin Tanner. I'm the chairman of the House Representatives Transportation Committee in Georgia. Appreciate the invitation. It's a beautiful day in Minneapolis. It's 63 degrees in Atlanta. I will say that. My daughter texted me and said that she was going to be taking my grandson out to play because it was so warm. I said, thanks. I'm glad I made it. There was delays in Atlanta because you were down to run one runway, but after I got here, I can understand why. So appreciate you having me. Let me say this at the beginning. I'm a Republican, and the district I represent in Georgia is one of the most conservative congressional area that I'm in is one of the most conservative congressional districts in the entire country. So when representatives that are in my area and my congressional district and my House district and the Senate area that is in my area talk about new taxes, it's a tough conversation politically. Because of the people we represent, again, one of the most conservative areas in the entire country. So, but I will say that we made some very tough choices. But Dave may have already told you this, but not one single member was defeated in their election after that vote because I think it had a lot to do with the way we went about it. But we were, I think, very successful. But that came about as some what I would say was not so good success stories. We learn from mistakes, and I encourage others to learn from our mistakes. But you see there, and I heard Dave talking about this, but the TIA Act of 2010 divided our state up into regions, and we had three regions that voted successfully to pass that, as you can see. And again, I know some of this may be a repeat of what Dave talked to you about, but it was a 1 cent sales tax referendum. And I can tell you from those days, I was actually serving when that passed and as a county manager running county government and working at the local level. So I was involved from the local perspective, meeting with the roundtables, creating project list and taking what the state had passed and trying to make that into something that would work. And it was failed miserably by the voters in our area. From a guy who was involved on the ground at the local level in that, I have quite a few reasons I believe that was the case, and I'll just share a few of those with you just so maybe you can understand where our voters were coming from. First of all, I think that doing it in a regional perspective is a good idea, but the way we created the project list, in our area, it was almost like people were just creating projects to get on the list. It wasn't need-based necessarily. It was very political, and it just became a little bit dysfunctional, and the voters saw that. And when they went to vote in our area, again, it was not good. As you can see, though, there was a potential of $22 billion statewide GDOT was responsible for delivering the program, and Representative, you hit on it, it's 25% return on to the local governments. Now, local governments received a lot of projects already in the roundtable, but this was on top of that. They got 25% of the dollars back collected that they could use on whatever projects they wanted to. There was also some incentives. If the region participated, their match on state funds would be decreased if they passed it. If they participated and it failed, they had still had a decrease in that state match. But if they chose not to participate or not to at least attempt it at all, their match was higher. So the state tried to set up a carrot instead of a stick approach to say, look, participate with us and we'll reward you as a result. There was a huge campaign led by some of the Metro Atlanta business community across the state to attempt to pass this statewide in all the regions. But you'll see in this next slide here, three of the 11 regions passed it. 46 counties, $2 billion over 20 or over 10 years. The potential could have been $20+ billion. The Metro Atlanta region, it 63-37 voted down. So pretty significant. My area, similar story, and I'm north of Atlanta, about 60 miles. But I think the next slide's pretty telling. There was $13 million spent trying to get people to go vote for this. Now, that wasn't spent by the state. That was spent by the private sector. But $13 billion, that'd be the fifth most expensive per vote if it was a Senate election, U.S. Senate election. So there was a whole lot of money spent, but it still did not resonate with the voters to go out and approve this statewide. So this was a pretty big wake-up call for the state after this. Dave hit on this, but one of the things that, and one of the reasons I think TIA wasn't successful, is the story had not been told properly. The state had not done a good job explaining to voters the situation and the state of repair of their transportation infrastructure in the state of Georgia. 2% of all roads being resurfaced in 2014, that's not sustainable. Resurfacing a road every 50 years is not sustainable. Bridges that were in the state of Georgia mostly constructed in the 50s with a 50 to 75 year life expectancy, we had bridges in very, very dangerous state of repair, not sustainable. And then 55% GDOT dependence on federal funding, which you all know when you are that dependent on federal funding, it slows the entire process down in the transportation world. And you can see that number, $1 to $1.5 billion needed just to preserve our existing infrastructure. And you see that $5 per month would be the individual impact for Georgians to be able to fund transportation. These are some of the principles that we used in looking at what to do next. It needed to be something that we could add to an existing program, something not reinventing the wheel, something that we were already doing to fund transportation, something that people were familiar with. We also knew that it had to be permanent because this was not a one-time fix. We were going to have to continue year after year after year to invest in transportation. And we needed the money now. We could not, this was becoming an emergency in our state. Georgia is, I believe it's just moved into the seventh most populous state in the country. And we have 11 million people. And the 13 counties, we have 159 counties in Georgia. But just the 13 counties around the Metro Atlanta area are adding 100,000 people per year. A million people a decade just in 13 counties around Metro Atlanta. That brings with it some issues that have to be addressed. And it needed to be dedicated to transportation. One of the things that all of us who are in elected office will have a tendency to do, if we've got funding that just goes into the general fund, priorities change year to year and that money goes to different places. Under our Constitution, the Georgia Constitution, The money we collect on gas tax can only be used to build highways and bridges. So that could not be reallocated for any other purpose, so we knew it needed to be dedicated. But we knew it needed to be multimodal. Not only did we need to invest in highways and bridges, but if you're adding 100,000 people to a city every year, we can't build roads fast enough. We have to have alternative forms of mobility. And Georgia's been voted the number one state in the country to do business 6 years in a row. And one of the things one of the reasons for that has been because around the Atlanta area, we've been able to offer alternative forms of mobility to this up and coming generation of workers. These companies are wanting to be close to transit opportunities. You all do that well here in Minneapolis, but we're improving in Georgia. It needs to stabilize the marketplace. Again, the business community, they were concerned about the state of transportation. We wanted to reduce dependency on federal programs and provide accountability. That's one of the things that was important to voters in my area. There had been somewhat of a distrust for in previous years of the Department of Transportation in Georgia and how their money was spent. One of the reasons that I think our referendum in 10 failed in our area was because people did not necessarily trust GDOT to deliver. So we needed some accountability. One of the things that helped is our GDOT commissioner that came in around this time did an excellent job of rebuilding public trust, which helped us as the elected officials. So instead of just delivering a bill and debating a bill, we knew we needed to take this conversation to the voters and to the people of our state. So we created a study committee on critical transportation infrastructure. It was a joint effort between the House and Senate, co-chaired by a member of the House, a member of the Senate, and with legislators on there and some other non-legislator members. You can see ACCG is our Association of County Commissioners. GMA is our Municipal Association. We wanted to build local support. But this committee traveled all over Georgia, to rural Georgia, to the city, to South Georgia, North Georgia, all over our state, had town hall meetings, had committee meetings, and heard about the state of infrastructure. Newspapers wrote about it, television stations reported on it, but what we were able to do is start changing the narrative about transportation. It's everyone, our citizens started understanding there's a problem in Georgia. We all ultimately agreed that we had a transportation infrastructure problem. Then it became a question of how do we fix it. I heard Dave hit on these, and I won't go over these, but one of the things that we did as part of the study committee is we brought out professional studies and information about the state of infrastructure. It wasn't just a group of politicians saying something needed to be done. We wanted to hear from independent groups that looked at our state, that looked at our infrastructure, and told us what the current situation was and what the needs were. After this study committee went around the state, heard from the citizens, we talked to the citizens, then it was time to develop legislation, and that's what resulted in House Bill 170. Again, 170 was a culmination of a whole lot of work, conversations across Georgia, and it was very much bipartisan. I will tell you, the Senate and the House both are led by Republicans. Both are under, at that time and today, very solid Republican control with a Republican governor. But everyone recognized we had an issue. But the chairs were Republican, but we had key members of the Democrat Party from our state on this committee. We call him the Dean of the House, has served in the Georgia House for about 45 years, and he is a Democrat from Columbus, Georgia, and very, very well respected within both parties, and is a very knowledgeable about transportation, the history of it. But we made sure we had the right people on that committee. This is an overview of what we did with House Bill 170. Again, it went into effect July 1st, 2015. And I was involved and there for all of this and serving in the General Assembly when we started talking about this, having the committee, and ultimately passing the legislation. It was effective. It generates $900 plus million in annual revenue. One of the things I think is important is it's indexed. It's indexed so as the cost of living goes up, the gas tax goes up. We wanted to do that on the front end. You know, I encourage you that, and there's a couple of mistakes I want to point out that we made in this, but you're going to have backlash anytime you do something this big. I encourage you just have to do it one time. That's one of the things that we, couple of things in Georgia, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but I'll go ahead and mention, through the negotiations between the House and Senate, we ended up not raising the gas tax necessarily at the level that it needed to be, so we stuck in a hotel motel tax of $5 a night, the electric car tax, and some other things, and that way we were able to keep the tax a little bit lower on the gas tax. Well, we wouldn't have gotten any more grief politically if we went ahead and put it where it needed to be and left the hotel motel tax out. The only thing people still talk about in Georgia, the only thing that I get calls about is the electric vehicles and the hotel motel tax. No one's complaining about the gas tax. One of the things that I told my constituents is I'm a big believer in user fees, and I'm a big believer in if you use a service, you pay for a service. Well, it's no fair way to fund roads, in my opinion, than excise tax on fuel, because the more you're driving, the more you use the roads. If you don't use the roads, you're not paying for the roads. So there's a direct correlation between the two. Hotel motel tax, you know, our goal was politically was we're going to be hitting people who are visiting our state. But what we find happens so often is people who live in our state travel to different parts of our state, and they don't like paying the $5 fee. And we get more grief about that probably than anything else. Talk about the alternative fuel vehicle fee. A couple of things. One, I would say that more folks drive more miles in the state of Georgia probably than they do here, just because seasonally we, you know, it's driving over here compared if you were in Atlanta today and seeing the traffic. People drive more. They also live further out. At least I live 60 miles out from the city. We have a whole lot of people that live where I live and commute into the city every day to work. And there's no other way to get there other than highways and bridges, and no real transit service out my way. So I do think, though, the number $150, $200 is probably the spot that is probably the break even with if you were buying gas. But one of the things I encourage you to do with the alternative fuel fee is really take a look at that, because one of the things is I travel around. I was out in Denver, Colorado at a transportation summit and other places. One of the biggest fears that states have is the move away from gas to alternative fuels and to electric vehicles. And if they're solely focused on the excise tax on fuel, at some point in the future, you're going to have to do something. It was easier for us now when there's so few people driving electric vehicles to go ahead and put that fee there and put it in place so that as that takes over the market in the future, we're already in a good spot in Georgia. If anything, we may be able to lower that number at some point in the future, but we won't have to raise it. Heavy truck fee, again, heavy trucks, they may not burn as much gas as they're doing damage to the roads, so that was there, and I already mentioned the hotel motel fee.
Chair?
Yes.
We have a couple of questions. First, Vice Chair Brad Tabke, and then Representative Elkins.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I had to step out for a little bit, so thank you very much for being here and coming up. On that last slide that you had, were there any major revenue sources that you discussed and considered but left out of the end product, and if so, what were they?
One of the things that we had talked about, actually in the House version, it had a tax on rental cars. There was a tax on rental cars. Again, trying to think about things that put cars on the roadways, but also that folks from Minnesota and other states coming to Georgia could pay for, that our citizens didn't have to necessarily pay for. But one of the things we found when we started looking at the statistics and the numbers on rental cars is more people who actually live in the state rent cars than outside the state because of insurance issues, where they've had a wreck and that type of thing. So through that negotiation, ultimately through conference committee, that was taken out. But we looked at everything you can imagine for tax purposes. But at the end of the day, it came down to what could folks like me sell? We're going to raise taxes. That's a dirty word in my district. But what could we explain to the public in a way they could understand it? And it was a user fee, and that's what we landed on. The other thing that we wanted to be able to do is have something sustainable, and we knew that was a reoccurring fee that we could pretty well count on. We could tell over a period of several years how many gallons of gas. In the past, we had sales tax on fuel. We took that off at the state level because that revenue stream was fluctuated all over the board depending on how much gas was. And from a state and the citizens' perspective, they thought, well, the state likes it when gas is higher because they're collecting more money. Well, in this case, it doesn't matter what the price of fuel is. We're collecting the same amount. Now, I'll tell you something else that helped Georgia. And the reason that no Republican or no Democrat was defeated in an election is fuel prices remain low. And actually, they were higher and went down after this passed. So that was luck. But people were out there, the opponents of this were out there saying, oh, your gas price is going to be $5 a gallon because your state legislator's passing this. Factually not correct, but if gas had jumped up for other reasons, it would have been a different story. But so we were fortunate.
Thank you. Follow up, and then we're getting some questions.
Oh, that's good.
So this
Thank
is good. Representative Tabke.
With the excise tax, was that imposed all at one time, or was that gradually stepped in over time?
It went into effect July 1st, 2015, and it was all at one time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Elkins, then Nelson, then Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Tanner, first I want to agree with you that I agree 100% that we should be funding transportation primarily with user fees. In fact, I would go so far as to say that we should treat our transportation systems as public utilities that are basically financed by people who use them in proportion to their usage. So the question, I guess, is that, thinking that way, what the alternative fuel vehicle tax is, which is a flat fee rather than a usage-based fee. Are you guys starting to look at to the future with where there's a lot more electric vehicles and looking at mileage-based fees as an eventual replacement for the excise tax as the percentage of electric vehicles grows?
That's been talked about by different folks, but there's a genuine fear. A lot of our citizens, at least in my district, does not want the government having any type of ticker to know here's how many miles that they drove in a given year, or I think that at some point that we may have to revisit the amount of the fee, because I think even in Georgia it probably is just a tad more than what the average car is spending in tax in normal fuel, but I think we're set up well for the future to continue to, because even if it's an alternative vehicle, for years, several years coming up to this, they were basically paying nothing toward the roads, even though they're using the same roads and they have the same wear and tear. And we were also giving them a tax credit in Georgia to buy an electric vehicle. In addition, the federal government was giving a tax credit to buy. So we were cutting our nose off in Georgia to spite our face, because we were encouraging everyone to go out and buy an electric car, giving them a tax incentive to do it. Matter of fact, you could almost buy an electric car in Georgia and not pay anything for it after you got your tax credits. But they wouldn't pay anything toward the roads. So I think sometimes we swing the pendulum maybe sometimes a little bit too far. Others might disagree with me, but I think at some point that number will probably be revisited and trued up to what the actual cost would be for a normal vehicle fuel consumption. But not there's not any serious conversation around tagging that back to miles driven. No, sir.
Okay, Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tanner. Couple questions I have. One has to do kind of ties off with the about the electric vehicles. What is your gas per mileage, or your gas per gallon, or tax per gallon on that you currently have in Georgia?
It's the 26. The state tax is a 26 cents excise tax, and the 29 cents for fuel, and 29 cents for diesel.
Okay, and that was the first question I had then, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
The other question I had, and I heard it, maybe I heard it wrong, but they said that when they passed this bill, they created the regions, or did you have those regions before for the miles? Because in Minnesota, we have 8 regions that MnDOT areas are divided up into. So I was wondering if that was new or that was existing.
That was the regions. In House Bill 170, it doesn't. Regions doesn't fall into that. But it was in 2010 when we did the TIA legislation. We use the regional commissions. We call them regional commissions that we have the state split up in. We use those existing boundary lines to create that region. Now, House Bill 170 is purely statewide, so it's not split up into regions. It doesn't go back necessarily to a specific area. It's not based on politics. The decisions how the money is spent is based on need. And formulas that we have in place. In Georgia, we have a commissioner of the Department of Corrections that's higher. I mean, we have a commissioner of the Department of Corrections, but in this case, the commissioner of the Department of Motor or Transportation. But we also have a director of planning. The commissioner, he works for the board. The board is appointed by the legislators. In Georgia, those of us in the House who serve in the 9th Congressional District, so there's several of us that represent that area, we all get together and caucus and elect a DOT board member to represent the 9th Congressional District. And everyone across the state does that. The House and Senate each get one vote member. They hire the commissioner. That's worked out well because there's a lot of legislative oversight because of that. But then the director of planning, who actually plans the money and plans the project and assigns dollars to those projects, he's appointed by the governor. So there's checks and balances between the General Assembly and the governor. And, of course, we appropriate the funds on an annual basis.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tanner.
Yes, ma'am.
So Georgia's you have referendums in Georgia?
Do we have referendums?
Yeah.
Like what type of referendums?
Well, here in Minnesota, the voters only can vote on constitutional amendments.
Okay. We have, the answer is yes and no. Now, House Bill 170 was not a referendum. We passed that in the General Assembly. That was a general law. Now, in Georgia, we have several different forms of sales tax that the local voters get to vote on to decide. We have what's called ESPLOSH. It's an education local option sales tax. The local voters can bring that to a vote. Local Board of Education can bring that to a vote. Then we have what's called SPLOSH, special purpose local option sales tax. The county commission can bring that to the citizens for a vote. So in creating the original TIA back in 2010 that was in the regions, the idea was to build on that to create a sales tax to fund transportation. But when that failed and we started going around the state, the reasons we thought the guy who lives in downtown Atlanta that uses transit, that pays to use transit, that goes to the grocery store and goes to Walmart or wherever, he was having to pay sales tax to help pay for transportation, and he didn't like that. The grandparents that live in my area that, you know, just drive a few hundred miles a year, that don't go anywhere, but they buy stuff. So that's why we decided it was better to go the user fee route and go with the gas tax. But that was voted on by the General Assembly and not the citizens.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Representative Driscoll, did you have a question also?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Tanner, thank you for coming up here. Minnesota does not always look like this.
I have been here before.
We do have days that look like Georgia, but those are June, July, and August. Yes. So August is we have the same humidity level you do. Sir, to help us scope out a little bit more of the sources that Georgia has for funding, very quickly in Minnesota we also get federal money like you do for your interstate highway system. The state usually takes care of funding the state highways, and then we get down into what we call local roads and bridges, so counties, cities, and the like. Does any of the funding that you're talking about here today make its way down to those local levels for county, city, road, and bridge projects? You know as well as anybody here that the state interstate system built in the 50s and 60s is really showing its wear and has been a credible asset for the United States. And so are a lot of those roads that are tributaries to those main thoroughfares. And so if you could just respond to that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think the president recently said that the interstate system was built to ultimately hold a country at 100 million people, and we're going to be approaching, 300 million soon. So it was built for one-third of what we currently have in the country, like most of the roads we have in most of our states. But, yes, we do funnel money down through House Bill 170 to local cities and counties several different ways. One way is we have what's known as an LMIG program. That's a local maintenance program. In Georgia, the way we determine that funding is by center lane road miles. So we take the total amount of money, and I'm throwing out a number so you can't hold me to it. It's about around $150 million a year goes into LMIG. And that amount's divided out by center lane road miles. So whatever your county falls into that category, it's divided by the total, and that's what you get. You can use those funds for whatever you want to on local roads and local projects. In addition to that, we have, and you see on this slide, in addition to House Bill 170 money, we've been putting in for the last 5 years, and we're going to do it again this year, $100 million in addition to that money that we're bonding to repair bridges. We also have a bridge program through the state for local bridges. And just to give you an example, in Georgia, we rank every bridge, local bridges and state bridges. And if your bridge receives a certain ranking locally, GDOT will go to that local community and say to them, look, if you can allow us to close this bridge for the period of time it takes, we will pay 100% of the cost to repair it. And we use state funds to do that, to help local governments fund their bridges. We also have local safety projects, intersection improvements. But, yes, there's a lot of money that funnels its way down to local projects.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Chan, that's very, very enlightening. Two other questions for you. Do you also use state general fund money on your state's general fund budget to fund the transportation and road and infrastructure improvements?
We do to some degree, but it's much less than it was at one time. Because of the House Bill 170 funding. That's the that funding, and one of the things, and I may have a slide on this, I'm not sure, but I'll go ahead and say this. I mentioned about accountability. One of the things that there was a concern about if our Department of Transportation gets all this money, they're going to grow their administrative cost of doing business. So we created some oversight where they had to present to us, the House and Senate Transportation Committee, on an annual basis, a 10-year plan of the percentage of money they're going to spend of their total budget in each category. Because what we wanted to be able to see is that administrative cost did not continue to creep up. And it hasn't in Georgia. One of the things that's actually happened in Georgia is House Bill 170 has created a lot of private sector jobs, because we went from, in the early 70s, we had over 10,000 employees in GDOT. Today we have 4,000 employees in GDOT. What's happened is we're hiring private engineering firms on a case-by-case basis and others to do work. So it's created a lot of private sector jobs. Matter of fact, I bought, and you should have one, one of the things I wanted to be able to see was what the downstream effect was on the economy and the infrastructure of Georgia based on House Bill 170. So We had the University of Georgia has a institute of government called the Carl Vinson Institute, very, very well known across our state and across the country. We had them do an independent study. It lasted about 8 months of projects that had been done, but also what that creation was in the economy. Because you think about it, if we're spending an additional $1 billion, that means that somebody's providing the gravel, somebody's hauling the asphalt, somebody's making it. Those people are now going to the store and buying bread. It has a downstream effect on the economy. And we came back with what we kind of expected would probably be the case. It's almost a 2x multiplier. For every dollar we spend, it creates 2x that in the economy. And that's helpful for us, again, politically, to be able to say that there's a few things that we all agree on government needs to do and do well, and infrastructure's typically, at least in Georgia, most everyone agrees it's the government's responsibility to provide good infrastructure. And as a business guy, I know that I need to look at return on investment in my business, so I want to be able to invest, and I have to spend money to make money. And I think we're seeing that in Georgia. As we've invested in our infrastructure, since that happened, we were one of the – I'm not sure if any other state actually got raised in the infrastructure report card that's done every 4 years. I think we may have been the only one. We actually went up for the first time, but we're also seeing businesses take note, and they're moving to Georgia because of that.
Representative Driscoll, I'm a little aware of the time here, and I know you have maybe a follow-up.
It's just a very quick follow-up.
And then what I'd like to do, I know there's a couple more member questions, but I'd like the chairman to maybe get through his PowerPoint, and then we'll get to the questions after that, and then we have one more speaker. So thank you, Representative Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Tanner, you can really literally answer this in a yes or no. In the state of Minnesota, we also do annual bonding or biannual bonding. Do you use any bonding money for road infrastructure, roads, bridges, and your transportation system?
We do, and I think it – I don't want to take too long, but I do want to expound on that for just 1 second. We do P3 projects. We have an authority called CERTA, which is state toll authority. And we're doing a managed lane SIP projects around Atlanta now. We've opened up 35 miles, the longest stretch of managed lanes in the country, on 75 North. We've also done it on 75 South. We're doing our next project, Georgia 400, coming north out of Atlanta. After that, the perimeter around Atlanta is 285. We're going to build managed lanes there. Just to give you a quick example, the 75 project we opened, people coming in from Cobb County into Atlanta, it's decreased their commuter time one way by 45 minutes if they drive the managed lane. Outside the managed lane, it's decreased it by 15 minutes. It's a huge success. It's a public-private partnership. We use bonding to do that through our CERTA authority that we created.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. So you can proceed, Chair, and then we'll conclude your presentation with a couple of member questions.
I mentioned the $100 million for the bridge. We also included in House Bill 170 some one-time funding for transit, $75 million, with a promise that we would revisit that in the future. And then we also had the ability, we talked about TIA and we talked about the sales tax and the fact that voters, for the most part, didn't approve that in a region level. But what we did do in House Bill 170 is we went back and changed that to say to a local community, if you want to, your local county commission in Georgia, you can go out and ask the voters to approve a 1 cent sales tax solely for transportation. And it's just within your county. The county's responsible for coming up with what projects are going to be worked on, and they give that list to the voters, and the voters get to either vote it up or down. And that's been successful. We're seeing more and more counties take advantage of that. What a lot of counties are doing is they're coming to GDOT and saying, if we approve this, will you partner with us? One county in particular, Forsyth County, is one of the fastest growing counties in the country. They voted themselves a property tax increase. The citizens did of that county of $250 million to widen Georgia 400, which is a major state road, along with some other projects, in order to get bumped up because of the need. So there's been a lot of partnerships created. And again, I mentioned the legislative oversight. Again, I mentioned already about the credit on the electric vehicles were eliminated. We also eliminated sales tax exemption on jet fuel, and that's been back and forth a little bit. But We also, local governments still collect some sales tax on their local sales tax on fuel. We cap that at $3, so if gas goes over $3, then they don't collect any more than that. Thank goodness gas in Georgia's less today. House Bill 170, I talked about that. I want to mention just a couple of other things to you that where we've been going since that time, and that's 2015. Last year we passed House Bill 930, which was creating the first real regional transit authority. We had a whole lot of different communities and different authorities in silos. We wanted to pull all of that together, so we did a two-year study on how to do that, and that came together in House Bill 930. It also, we put $100 million in, the most we've ever funded at the state level in transit last year into transit in the Atlanta region. Partnering with our managed lane system, we're going to run bus rapid transit opportunities and inline bus rapid transit stations within our managed lane system throughout the Atlanta area as we move forward. We're also, this year, we're going to be introducing legislation to make some changes on how we deliver rural transit services. We've got some very innovative ideas that we're going to be rolling out this year. But the next big thing that we're going to be working on is we've introduced legislation to create a freight logistics commission. Georgia has a huge issue with freight. We've got one of the fastest growing ports in the country in Savannah. We're currently deepening the port to take the largest shipping containers in the world. And we're going to have to do some things with freight. So that's our next big lift in Georgia's finding some solutions to that. So, Mr. Chairman, I know there's other questions, so I won't belabor the points. But that's kind of brings you from a 2010 to a current state. And I will tell you, the citizens in Georgia, when they're polled and when we talk to them, and I talk to them in my community, They're much happier about the future of transportation and infrastructure in the state.
Thank you very much. So let's hear from, we have a question from Representative Torkelson, then Representative Petersburg, and then we have one more speaker after that. Joachim. So we'll take those three for Chair Tanner, and then we'll bring on Mayor Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome Chair Tanner to Minnesota. I'm sure you're enjoying yourself here.
I am, thank you.
You'll have something to brag about when you get home. Here in Minnesota, we have a pretty extensive system of registration fees that are charged annually on vehicles based on their original value. Do you have a similar revenue stream in Georgia?
Chair Tanner.
The answer to that question, yes and no. We, a few years ago, we did away with what we call the birthday, what citizens call the birthday tax, because it was due on your birthday. So every birthday you got a card in the mail from the tax commissioner that said, hey, you got to pay this $200 on your car ad valorem based on your value of the car. A few years ago, we did away with that, and we started charging a one-time sales tax on new vehicles so that you pay the 7%, which is what what is collected in Georgia and my community. You pay 7%, and that's it. You pay it one time, and from then on, you just pay a $20 tag renewal fee. So when I renew my vehicles, I get it in the mail. It's $20, which covers the cost of the decal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Tanner. I think we've uncovered a significant difference between Georgia and Minnesota, and one that we, I'm sure, will be evaluating as we move forward.
But I will say that the amount of money we're bringing in stayed the same, because not only are we doing it on new cars, but we're doing it on used car transactions. So there, you have to pay a sales tax. So our money that we collect in that is staying consistent.
Interesting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I was going to be similar to that, because as I was reviewing the statistics between Georgia and Minnesota, realizing that Georgia's population is about double what Minnesota's are, and yet we have about 20,000 more miles of public-owned roads at 143,000 versus 123,000, it seemed like there was quite a significant difference. And then just calculating out, it looks like a cent of fuel tax raises close, just under about $60 million a year, if I calculate it right, whereas Minnesota's at just a little over 30. So you're bringing in a whole lot more for that sales tax, which I had the question about the sales tax and tabs. Are you doing additional? Because Minnesota here, we have to do that in order to accomplish the funding source. Of course, the biggest difference is represented in today's weather outside as, yeah, as well. So if you have any other comment, but I think the clarification was there. So mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I will say that one of the things we were also able to do is we're much more self-independent from the federal government now, so we're able to front-load a lot of our projects and require less federal. We still bring in the same federal dollars, but we're able to go ahead and get the projects jump-started, which has helped also.
Fantastic. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here, Chair Tanner. Thank you. I'm sorry I missed part of your presentation. You went through that last slide kind of fast. Could you touch on your 2019 statewide transit bill that you're looking at?
Yeah, we in Georgia, like a lot of states, we have rural transit dollars that come in to the Department of Community from the federal government, from the Department of Community Health, from the Department of Community Affairs in Georgia, through GDOT, the Federal Transit Authority, come from several different federal agencies for different purposes. It may be to provide a Medicaid transport to someone that needs it. It may be 5311 funds that come through Federal Transit, which is what we call a lot of times dollar bus, senior citizen type rides. But one of the things we find is you've got all these different agencies doing it, state agencies. We have three main state agencies providing the service. So as a local government, we would have to deal with three separate state agencies, file three separate reports, have three separate annual inspections, and it's just there's no reason for that. So there's some other states. Ohio is one. Kansas is one. Some states have streamlined that process, so it's all under one state agency. So we're going to be working to do that. We have some legislation that does that, that will do that this year. In addition to that, one of the things that we found, too, is in Georgia, and I'm sure it's this way in here in your state, but we have a lot of people live in the city, but then they usually have transportation options available to them. We have a whole lot of other people that live outside the city in rural areas. And one of the things we found, because I chaired a Transit Governance and Funding Commission for the last couple of years, and that's what 930 came from, and that's what this other bill came from. But what we found was we've got smaller urban centers that are urban that are driving economic growth, businesses, hospitals, health care, educational opportunities. But around that, you have very rural places. One of the biggest barriers for people who are unemployed to get employed is being able to have reliable transportation to get to the educational opportunity or to get downtown to in their area of the state. So one of the things we're looking at doing is we're splitting the state up in what we're calling regional mobility zones. Every regional mobility zone will have a regional mobility manager. That person's responsible for delivery of transit services. We will not have three separate state agencies anymore. It'll be a one-stop shop. In addition to that, we have worked with Uber and Lyft and our taxis, and we have an agreement with them, which they're going to testify in favor of what I'm about to tell you. We're going to have a rideshare fee on 50 cents per ride, which is going to generate about $60 million a year that will be dedicated to these transit services. We're going to create some pretty innovative things. I'll give you an example. One is we've identified 27 counties in our state that have at least 125% or greater of the state's unemployment rate and 75% or less of the average family income. They're poor, very poor. One of the biggest barriers is not having good transportation. So we're going to provide some direct assistance for them to get to the places they need to go for work or for education, get their GED, or to go to a technical college. In addition to that, we're going to create some competition among our zones to provide some tax breaks, some tax credits to businesses who will hire someone who's currently unemployed and provide them transportation. Now, that may be that they're giving them an Uber Lyft card or they're providing some transportation. We've ran the numbers, again, return on investment. If they're unemployed, it will bring more money into the state system than we're giving that tax break. So our folks are excited. The business community is excited around the state. There's a warehouse in Savannah we've talked to that's having a very difficult time getting help. And one of the problems is they need to be able to go two counties over, and there's just no transportation to get them there. So there's a lot going on around that currently, but that's generally a quick overview.
Thank you. So one last question. I just want to make sure I heard something right before we have our last speaker. Did you say that Uber and Lyft are, is it 50 cents a ride? So if I call Lyft, then there would be an additional 50 cents on my ride from here back home. Is that
How let me tell you, in Georgia currently.
Do you fund transit with that?
Yes. In Georgia currently, we have sales tax on our taxis. Sales tax on our taxis. Uber and Lyft, according to the state, should be paying sales tax. Uber and Lyft's not paying sales tax. So there's litigation between the state and Uber and Lyft over that. The taxis feel like they're being treated unfairly because they're treated differently than Uber and Lyft. So I saw this as an opportunity to say, what about if we put the sales tax issue to bed so you no longer have to pay sales tax? That's gone. But it's a 50-cent per ride fee, and it's dedicated to transit. Everyone's on board with that. So that's what we're working towards.
Well, thank you so much. And, again, I think that you this very successfully, I think, won over a lot of skeptics as well, and the stories you told me were very instructive, and I appreciate it. And Representative Tanner, I think we'll have a little bit of time to stick around if people have some additional questions, and we appreciate so much that you've made this trip up here in the middle of winter, and look forward to our ongoing conversations.
Well, I appreciate being here, and I'll leave you with one thing is if you decide to move forward with anything, one of the lessons that I think you need to learn from us is do it together. We did it with the business community. We did it with Democrats, Republicans, all working together to find common solutions, and that was the message we sent out to the voters of Georgia. And we not every single person in the House and Senate voted for it, but the overwhelming majority did, and we were very successful. And the representatives and senators have been able to return to continue to do their job as a result of that. So thank you
so much. Thank you. So our last guest today who will be making a presentation is John Robert Smith. Mr. Smith served for many years as the mayor of Meridian, Mississippi. And so he knows about transportation and infrastructure issues as a local elected official. And he now is the chairman of a national organization called Transportation for America. And so he is also one of the people I met in Atlanta as well, and he's able to join us and I think has some very interesting observations he can share with us as we journey towards our big transportation bill. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Smith, and please state your name for the record.
John Robert Smith, Chairman of Transportation for America, and Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you so much for affording me this time to visit with you today. I served for 20 years in local government, 16 years as the mayor of my hometown of Meridian, Mississippi, Republican mayor of that city. It's a strong mayor form of government, so I know well the responsibility and accountability that comes with serving in the public, whether that's at the local level or the state level. And I sincerely want to thank each of you for your service to the people of Minnesota. I know how much time it takes away from your businesses and from your family, even if you bring them with you. And I encourage you to continue to do that. So it is good to be with you. I learned very quickly after being elected mayor that there was not a single pothole in my hometown that identified itself as a Republican or a Democrat. They just all had my picture in the bottom of those potholes. It was an infrastructure issue that I needed to address as a Republican mayor with my majority Democrat city council, and we did, but we couldn't be just caretakers of an existing infrastructure. We had to think of the future and how we would connect our people more seamlessly, not only throughout our community, but throughout the region in the southeast there. We built the South's first multimodal transportation center in my first term as mayor. We connected our interstates, our city grid system, our city transit system, intercity bus, intercity rail, all together in one place in the downtown. It was an economic development project for me as much as it was a transportation project. And being a Republican, like the chairman, I owe a return on investment for the money I spend that belongs to my people. And that project has leveraged $160 an additional investment for every $1 we put in at the city level. I think that's a pretty good ROI. So after 20 years, and I was a single parent, after 20 years in local government, my children came to me and informed me that they were done and I was done, that I could not seek a fifth term as mayor, and I respected that choice, and I was able to come and chair the newly formed Transportation for America. We are a national alliance of local leaders, elected leaders, business leaders, chamber leaders that have come together principally. Let's see if I can make this work.
We have some infrastructure issues with our state office building.
Is there another? Can I just use this? And basically, at our simplest level, we believe in transportation systems, and we try to help others create transportation systems that are safe, affordable, convenient, and actually connect us to jobs and to services and to opportunity. I've been to the Twin Cities many times, but if I want to understand the challenges and the opportunities here in this state, then I've got to spend time in greater Minnesota. And so I did that. I spent 3 months traveling to 24 different communities, many very small communities, throughout the state, visiting with over 80 local leaders, because I needed to hear and to learn their challenges and their visions for their community. And I learned a lot, which I'd like to share briefly with you. First of all, as a Mississippian, let me tell you, I saw more corn than I have ever seen in my life. And I followed many a truck loaded with sugar beets on after the harvest, and was introduced to my first Minnesota cheese curd. So I learned a good bit. But what I also learned was that here in Minnesota, you manufacture transit vehicles and transit components in a significant way. If you go to Crookston, you'll see New Flyer. If you go to Bloomington, you see Thermo King. And whether the vehicles and the ones we saw were going to eventually go to San Francisco, even though they're going to be running on transit in San Francisco, those jobs are right here in Minnesota. And I think we need to appreciate that connectivity. I visited with the mayor of Delano, and his entire volunteer system that supports his very robust recreational park system is based on the young couples that live there, that run those programs for their children. Well, his concern is that their commute into the metropolitan area where their good jobs are is becoming so long and so torturous, especially on the way home, that they no longer have the energy to volunteer in those programs. And he says, I've talked to them, I know that some point in the future they may be forced to move in closer to the job, and I can't afford to lose those young couples in my community because they are indeed the future. I visited with the county commissioner of Redwood County. He tells me that their transit for him is connecting seniors who don't have a support network of family to the grocery store in Redmond that they use the green route to get to. It's also about connecting working families to child care. He told me about the families who, there are two income families but one automobile. And if that transit system goes away, then one of them will have to stay home and can't work. I also visited with the mayor of Waseca. It's all economic development to the mayor there. He knows he has to be connected to the hub of Rochester and to other regional hubs. And he's very proud of the young workforce that he is educating and developing there in Waseca, but he wants to maintain them. And while he appreciates his juxtaposition on the highways and a growing air service, he knows that those young people are choosing other ways of moving about. And he wants to see that he can maintain them in his community. He's a very, very strong supporter of transit. I have letters from a number of these mayors, and I just read a couple of quick excerpts. One from the mayor of Owatonna. He says that When he was growing up, he loved the freedom that my car provided, but times have changed. While our town's historic architecture still shines, younger people these days aren't interested in always being tied to a car like we once were. You have made a commitment to transportation with improvements on Highway 14, and I hope you make the same commitment to transit across Minnesota. Without that support, our transit service would cease to exist. And the mayor of New Ulm writes, the reality is that my community needs to be able to move people, soybeans, corn, hogs, butter, cheese, and more. With our current infrastructure, we are unable to do that efficiently. We need two things, more bus service and more capacity on Highway 14. So these mayors in smaller places understand what is missing and what is needed for their future. I hope we can focus on that. You heard from Georgia about how they raise funds. I want to take you quickly through what other states have done. There may be some ideas worth considering there. You can see how the state of Utah raised their money in taxes, but they also enabled their counties to raise a quarter cent in local option sales tax. So they got the buy-in from those counties across the state. It was not merely the gas tax revenue. Well, it doesn't seem to respond. But I can talk to you about California, but I think a better example for you would be Virginia. Virginia took three legislative sessions, and they did it in three phases. First of all, they wanted to increase funding, so they scrapped the sales tax, the state's gas tax, altogether. And instead, they replaced it with a percentage tax on wholesale fuel sales, and then they increased the state general sales tax. So they increased the funding, but I don't care how much funding you raise, you're going to have to pick your projects carefully. You'll never have enough money to answer everybody's wish out there. So they structured a way for Virginia DOT to judge the projects. And your constituents back home are not interested in the width of the right-of-way or the depth of the asphalt as a means of judging a project. What they want to know and what they understand is, will that investment reduce my congestion and my trip time? Will it improve my access to a job and to education? And will it help with the economic development of our region? Then the third year, it was about how they balance and obligate and share those funds. So first of all, 45% of the revenue goes to maintenance and repair, so that's not neglected. The remaining 55% is split evenly between priority state projects and priority local projects. And the importance of the priority local projects is they're awarded by region. So they have small regions. If you're in a smaller city, you're not competing with Richmond. You're competing with cities of your similar size for that money. So you, again, spread the support. Washington State tried to raise revenue just on a gas tax and realized they couldn't do that. So they allowed Sound Transit to increase their own revenue, and when they did raise the sales tax with it, it still wasn't all about roads and bridges. There was a significant amount for highways and roads, but also for other projects such as transit and bikeways and walkways. When you look at Oregon, they're in the mainstream of recruiting and keeping that youthful population. 23% decrease in miles traveled by car for that youthful generation, and a 40% increase traveled by transit. They raised the gas tax, as you see here, and a vehicle sales tax, and they also put a $15 tax on an adult bicycle purchase, which ultimately flows back to the bike community, and a tenth of a percent employee payroll tax. But look how they spread it. We're missing one. No, I'm going back.
And members, I know our time is winding down here, but if we could maybe just, Mr. Smith, do you think maybe 5 minutes?
Sure, sure.
I know if you need to go, that's fine, but we'll definitely adjourn at 2:20, time certain.
Pennsylvania did similar to Virginia, getting rid of their gas tax and creating a tax at the wholesale level, as well as other fees, and established a one-of-a-kind $144 million per year multimodal transportation fund, and allocated $220 million to local governments for their issues of roads and infrastructure. I could share others with you, but you heard from Georgia that no one was defeated because they voted for the increase in revenue for transportation. But what does it look like nationwide? Well, in 2015, we studied the 10 states that had raised revenue for transportation, and what was the outcome for those members who voted for raising that revenue. What we found is those who voted to raise the revenue for transportation in the 10 states that did so successfully, 98% were successful in their primary race, and over 90% retained their seat. So the notion that if you raise revenue for transportation, it's a threat to your career, I think doesn't bear out when you really look at how states have cobbled together funding and choices for raising transportation funding. And certainly none of the three of us from the South would presume to come here and tell Minnesota how you should bring together your choices on transportation funding. But I do think there are some lessons that can be learned and some takeaways from those successful states. Number one, if your revenue stream is only the gas tax, the odds are that will fail. Secondly, if it's only about roads and bridges, the odds are it will fail. So I encourage you to look at different funding streams that can be brought together, as you've seen in these states and in Georgia, and offer other choices, multiple choices for transportation that will suit not only urban areas, but rural areas as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you so much, all of our guests. We really appreciate it. And, yes, we have one final question from one of our senior members who's been involved in infrastructure from the day she arrived here, Representative Alice House.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, it's not a question, but a thank you. Those last summary points you made, I think, were very powerful. I hope we got them down. And Chair Tanner did an equally helpful thing when he said, if you make it political, voters will catch on. We would call them earmarks. I heard him say they began to list their project kind of the fair distribution that reflected priorities and needs, and voters see that. And so I wanted to thank you for that advice and those concluding comments.
Okay. So, members, thank you. Next week we will – oh, Representative Perkelson.
Well, since you didn't get a question out of Representative Hausman, I thought maybe I'd actually ask a question.
Yes, yes, Representative Perkelson. Another veteran infrastructure guy in the
– our last presenter, if he could step back forward again, Mr. Smith, are you aware of any states that have successfully implemented some kind of mileage-based user fee?
Yes. Oregon stepped out early on in a vehicle miles travel. And, of course, what we're dealing with, and at the federal level, you understand that in 2020, the trust fund goes bankrupt again. Why? Because we're driving more fuel-efficient vehicles, and we're driving vehicles that don't burn fuel at all. So every year, the federal government has to take out of the general fund to support the trust fund, which then supports highways, bridges, and transit. That's going to be a huge issue for the next Congress. Oregon got out ahead of this and said we're going to charge a vehicle miles travel, so it doesn't matter whether you burn gas or don't burn gas. The wear and tear you put on the road system is still collected at the state, and they've done that successfully. There are other states that are looking at it, and they're looking at different ways of collecting that fee or that tax. But again, if you're going to support your infrastructure, someone's going to pay for it. You know, it's ultimately going to be you. And I think you should certainly look at vehicle miles traveled. At the federal level, they'll probably look at increasing a gas tax, maybe indexing it to inflation as a part of their transportation funding package. But that's a good stopgap to get you to something else like VMT. And the note that you might hear, well, it's a way for the government to track me if we have a vehicle miles traveled based on how many miles you drive. Well, folks, if you have one of these, you are tracked right now. So I think that's a concern you needn't worry about.
Thank you. Well, that's a good insight as well. So, members, thank you, and thanks to our guests. Next week we'll be hearing some bills on February 12th, and then a week from today we'll be having a session on electrification of the transportation infrastructure, our special Valentine's Day edition of the Transportation Committee. So with that, members, we stand adjourned.